Watch it. Boys bracing. Here we go. And go hard. And go hard. Very good.
The Paddler's Pod with Sam and Macca.
Hello and welcome to the first ever episode of the Paddler's Pod. My name is Sam Jordan and I'll be one of your hosts taking you through this audio journey of the world's latest surf ski news, events, and everything else in between. Now, I can talk underwater, but I'm a bit of a hack when it comes to paddling on it. That's why I've enlisted the help of close friend, 2015 under 23 world champion, but still the reigning people's champion, the Wollongong womanizer, big wave charger, Mackenzie Hynard. Macca, welcome.
Thanks, Sam. Thanks for having me. Well, I guess we're in this together, but I'm glad you stopped.
Mate, we're in it together now.
I was a bit worried where we were going through with that, but you know, you've given yourself a bit of a rap. You're right. You can talk underwater. You do it as a day job, so here we are doing it as a nighttime job.
Yeah, that's right. And look, I guess it's a nice segue there. My day job is as a sports journalist for Channel 9 here in Australia, the biggest and best network, as I'm contractually obliged to say. But having paddled surf skis now, you know, essentially at a serious level for the last 10 years, I've always thought in the back of my mind that there needed to be something and someone to kind of step up and share the incredible stories that our sport has, not just at the elite racing level, as we've seen on www.thepaddler.news in the past few weeks, but also at a recreational level as well, and just what motivates people to get out on the water. And Macca, I guess this is essentially an extension of that, albeit probably a bit of a nonsensical extension. I think things are going to get pretty silly from time to time, but hopefully
that's exactly right.
Yeah, look, hopefully people will enjoy the experience anyway. Now, Mac, first episode, we've got plenty to talk about, I guess, not just in the racing world and events world, as we'll get to a little bit later
on. There, but...
Well, at the moment, you would think, but there's actually been plenty doing as we'll have a chat about. But I guess in terms of the Paddler website as well, there's been plenty of stories that have been catching people's eye. Mac, what have you enjoyed so far?
Sam, it's been a lot. I mean, you're not going to pump up your own tires. I know you're good at it enough. But some of the articles that have...
I didn't even buy to that one, to be honest, mate. No. That's one thing. Yeah, I'll give you a spray for this. That's one thing that the Paddler is... that's one thing that I wanted to be in terms of the actual website and the content is just giving...
It's a bit of a passion project, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is, mate. Because as I mentioned before, there's so many incredible stories and they just haven't been getting told. And you know, we're starting to see some of those get rolled out, you know, in a news sense. Things like Tom Norton's incredible surgery last year that he had just 6 weeks before Worlds. Like, he kept that so close to his chest, we didn't even know. And we're some of his best mates. And
that's exactly right. The toughest individual going around.
Yeah, and then from the In the Boat series that we've been running as well, that's where the Paddlers have been writing, in their own words, some of their experiences. You know, we've heard from Corey Hill and Danielle McKenzie, the two world champions. We've heard from Shannon Eckstein, who's the greatest Ironman of all time. But then, you know, as well, we've had an In the Boat article from Ian Black that actually
wasn't incredible.
Yeah, it was probably the most read and the most well received.
That's my favourite. Not to be biased. Sorry, Corey. Sorry, D-Max or the rest of you. It was just really captivating. Like, I obviously didn't know Blackie prior to his resurgence onto the scene, and to hear what he had to say and sort of like what changed and how he went about it. Yeah, like, it was so well received within the paddling community. Maybe not so much for... I mean, I loved it. I wouldn't say I'm a top paddler or whatever. But I think it really filtered down amongst everyone else.
Don't worry, mate. I'll pump up your tires for you. But look, that's essentially the whole idea behind this, is that sharing the experiences that bind us all together when it comes to getting the boat and getting out on the water. So, Mac, that's our goal. That's what we'll be here to do. And, mate, first up, there's plenty for us to talk to. What do you reckon? We get straight into it.
Just before we do, I think we're going to make a special mention to the Big O. You might have heard his familiar voice.
How could I forget? How could I forget to mention the Big O, the man that has bound this entire podcast together, our new patron the podcast as well.
Yep, the big Oscar Chalopsky. So, patron saint of the pod. Thanks for that, Oscar. You probably don't know it, but there you are.
Kind enough to lend his voice to the introduction theme, as well as a few other segments that we've got along the way, including this one.
The Peddler's Pod. Power Plays.
There it is, spoken by the man himself, the Paddler's Pod Power Plays. This week brought to you by Stella Kayaks, the next generation in performance. And Mac, this is where we're going to take a look each episode at the five big plays that have captivated our attention. Now, these aren't necessarily the five best things that have happened. These aren't necessarily the five worst things. But they're the five things that have certainly turned our heads. Some may be good, some may be bad. Macca, we're going to have to get off the fence with these ones.
Yeah, you're not wrong. We're harsh critics, maybe at the best of times. But look, I think we do all right to pick maybe some of the five best things to come out of paddling each time the podcast airs. And hopefully the listeners tend to agree, or maybe they don't.
Number five.
No disagreements on our first entry, our first ever power play on the Paddler's Pod. Austin Kiefer's video, one of the most incredible pieces of cinematography I've seen around ocean sports, but by far the greatest piece of video I've seen of surf ski paddling. Macca, what did you think?
Incredible. One word.
Amazing.
You know, for some of you that may know, I started up a videography, I guess, paddler's page. It's called Lame. Pretty average, actually very average compared to what Austin's done here.
Oh, mate, come on, pump it up.
No, I'm a realist, Sam. This is incredible. This is like what I used to watch as a 13-year-old going surfing. You used to watch surf movies and quickly run down the beach and pretend that you're a better surfer than what you are, and that's exactly what this paddling does.
Didn't it give you that feeling? Now, for anyone who hasn't seen it, get to Austin Kiefer's Facebook page. He's posted it there. It's been shared all around the world. It would have been pretty hard to have missed it, but it is first class. And that's something that I've spoken to you about a fair bit over the past few months, Macca, in terms of wanting to start this website, thepaddler.news, to raise the standard of the coverage of our sport. Now, what we see in this video is absolute first class from any sport. You know, this is the kind of content that will make people sit at home and realize they want to take up surf ski paddling, which, you know, we are seeing the sport grow all across the world, and I think stuff like this only enhances that. Evan, I can't find his last name on the post, but Evan, Austin's friend who put this piece together.
Quick shout out.
Congratulations. Yeah, it is amazing. But it's not just the cinematography that does it for me. Austin's words as well, Mac. He has such a way with words, and his description of the act of paddling, which is essentially, you know, man versus ocean, it's moving. It is moving, and it's pretty emotional.
It is. I mean, no, this is no plug by any means. We are both just astounded by the quality of this video. And I mean, you know, he must take some great things out of you saying he speaks quite well, but I'm the same. He's someone that you could just sit by and have a quiet beer and listen to. He could say whatever he wanted, and I want to listen to it. It's so soothing, but he also has that captivating way with words. He's at like the gorge. I'm pretty sure for the last 3 years, not only has he placed extremely highly, finishing just behind Kenny last year, but he also goes ahead and MCs the presentation, which go for over there, maybe 2 hours. And I've seen him raffle off things at auctions that should never be raffled off. It's incredible.
It certainly adds to it as well, my admiration, just by the fact that he is... There's some nice people in paddling, but Austin is the nicest man
standalone in the world.
Oh, what a man. In fact, you know what? It's funny. Even though we've both raced internationally for so long, I didn't really know Austin too well personally until we were in Ireland together last year after the Irish Championships over there. And within a day, I already looked at Austin as if he was one of my lifelong best friends. He just has that. He just has that charm.
He just has that aura, doesn't he?
It is only fitting that, you know, he's produced a piece like this because, mate, it is amazing. Absolutely unreal.
Number four.
And one of our other international favourites as well, Hayley Nixon, had her own very exciting content to share. A little bit different to Austin's video. But Hayley and partner Paul have announced that they are going to be parents. Hayley will welcome a little girl into the world in November, and Mac, we could not be happier.
I certainly couldn't. I've been fortunate enough to know Hayley and Paul for a little while. They've even
come and stay at my house here. I think I had someone else staying, so they had to bunk on the couch, which was sort of rather unfortunate. I do apologize. But no, like, so stoked. And she's done so many great things for paddling, not just paddling, but more specifically, I believe, women in paddling. Just,
well, that's exactly right. And I think there's a sweet irony in the fact that that she'll be having a little girl, considering how much she's done to nurture the female participation in paddling right around the world. Now, when Hayley won the World Championship in 2017, she explained it recently in an article for the Paddler.news, but when she won that World Championship, she said that she made it her own little personal quest to lift the profile of women's racing, and she certainly did it. You know, Macca, you don't have to think back too many years to see the disparity between men's and women's racing, whereas now, you know, most of the top international races, and certainly the biggest ones, offer equal prize money. And we've seen the flow-on effect that has had. The standard has raised through the roof. We've had a number of different athletes come into the sport now, especially in Australia. You know, a lot of our Nutri-Grain Iron women, people like Danielle McKenzie, who's now the undefeated paddler in the women's scene. Jordy Mercer is now racing ocean skis. And just to have that increased profile, it's massive for the sport worldwide. It has inspired so many female paddlers to really get into it and give it a go.
Yeah, no, couldn't agree more. And I think what she set out to achieve back in 2017, gaining, you know, the same sort of publicity, but also the monetary side, is a huge testament to that. You see girls that are seeing this as a viable option now to come and paddle surf ski, which it sort of wasn't really, maybe not an option before, but it's pretty incredible.
So we're going to be missing Hayley this year racing, but I guess in true Hayley winner's fashion, she could not have picked a better time to step away from international racing to give birth. Hayley, Paul, congratulations. We are all so happy for you.
Number three.
The $200,000 Shaw and Partners WA Race Week has plenty of people talking, and not just from the prize money perspective, but some of the new events they've added as well, including the Ironman getting involved. There's an invitational Ironman only event on the Wednesday around their Nippers clinic, as well as a downwind board paddle on the Monday. The reason for it, Earl Evans wants to see Australia's greatest Ironman go head-to-head with the world's best downwind paddlers. And as he sees it, he thinks that they'll be pushing the very best and looking to knock them off the top. Now, Mac, from an event perspective, I have to say from the outset, I think it is a brilliant move. A brilliant move.
I agree, Sam, I do.
The sport's on the bubble here in Australia in terms of kind of getting that wider appeal. And the best possible way to do it is to promote the fact that the stars of the surf lifesaving Ironman scene, which is a cultural staple here in Australia, are now getting in the boat and doing these races as well. That's something that we can really leverage to drive the sport forward. I just think it's probably going to ruffle a few feathers along the way, Mac.
I think so as well.
From a top paddler's perspective, you know, you finished second at the Doctor before. What do you think about the move? And what do you think about the suggestion that some of the best Ironmen may be coming for your podium?
I like it. I mean, the more the merrier for me. I've always loved racing. I thought, like, I'm probably one of the worst trainers going around, I would admit. But come race day, like, I'd rather just race every week, all the time. And that's what I use for fitness. But look, the race week's going to be interesting. You've got, I think it's five races for us on the ski. And then for these Ironmen, if they want to be in contention for the overall series at the end of the week, they also have to do this invitational Ironman. No one really knows quite the format yet, but there's no way that's going to be easy. It's only the best of the best going. And then, it's going to be tough for everyone. It's not one of those weeks. I remember last year, like, Corey won 4 out of 5 races, and even he got to the end and was absolutely exhausted. You know, he's the guy.
No one gets to that Saturday and is feeling fresh, are they?
And especially now with everyone, you know, you have to be there for the week. We've seen there's going to be a diminution in prize money, if I'm reading into it correctly, down to $30,000 for the Doctor instead of, I think, what it was, $80,000 last year. There's really an emphasis on making sure everyone comes over for the entire week.
Yeah, that's right. And you know what? I can kind of support that too in terms of the event's future. Like, obviously, they want people to be there for the whole week. Now, it's not an easy thing to do in terms of people having working commitments and the like, but if you're one of those elite paddlers who is gunning for the top prize money, look, you know, you're at the mercy of organisers, and this is what the organisers want to do. In terms of the Ironman event that you mentioned earlier, look, as I understand it, there's a one-off Ironman race. So there's no heats and finals. Once it's on the day, you know, that's it. So it's not like they're going to be doing an enduro format or anything like that. There is the opportunity for local Ironman to, they will be running wildcard trials for locals that morning, which I think is fantastic. And they're also handing out a number of wildcards as well. To Ironmen who weren't in the top five, and Ironwomen rather, who weren't in the top five of the Nutrigrain series last year, two of those that jump out already. Ali Day, after missing the series through injury, he'll be there taking part, as will the greatest of all time. And I'm not talking about Trevor Hendy, unlike the person who chipped me in the comment section of the Facebook post to announce it. Hey,
look, you set up a page, you open yourself up to criticism.
Exactly right. I love it. Keep it coming. No, I'm talking about Shannon Eckstein. And now he was someone who was at the race week last year, and he was going to be there again this year, but he's licking his lips at the opportunity of a one-off Ironman race in Perth in a bit of chop, as we know there's going to be with the wind. $20,000. It's going to be a really great spectacle.
I reckon he's got a bit of fire in the belly, to be honest.
Oh, absolutely.
I've trained with him a lot, right? Like a fair bit recently. I've got to know him a lot better over the years. Obviously, running his event together and, you know, growing up, idolizing him. And I never thought once I would ever have an argument with Shannon next time. But I'd come the day of organizing his event and running it all. We came to blows, but it was all good. It was good fun. But I think there's got to be... Sorry to cut you off, but there's got to be something there where he, like last year, he proved he was still one of the, 2 years ago, sorry, proved he was still one of the best Ironmen, and still is. And I think a lot of people might be a little bit afraid. It's a bit of match racing over there. Like you said, it's just holding on or wash riding on the way out. And then it's pretty much just chasing runs. And he is one of the best, if not the best, at all disciplines coming home.
It's going to be great racing. And I think the thing that I'm most interested about as well is actually seeing how the Ironmen go in the actual downwind surf ski racing. Now, with so much on the line, I think we're going to see a lot of them investing more time into it than they have previously. Now, we know just how good they have performed. Ali Day coming fourth at Molokai in 2019. Kendrick Louie finishing seventh in the Doctor last year as well. I'm really interested to see how they structure their seasons because, you know, it's essentially a question of how much they back themselves. There is more money, far more money, on the Shaw and Partners Race Week than what there is on the Nutrigrain Series. Maybe we will see guys back themselves and go all in on downwind paddling. It's going to be really interesting.
Yeah, I think so as well. And I think going to the girls, that's going to be hot. I'm excited to watch the girls.
For sure.
Like, there's so many there. I mean, D-Max set herself out as the girl with the target on her back. I'm sure she wouldn't mind me saying, and I think she's said it. She's obviously been such a dominant powerhouse come the end of last season, just winning anything and everything. And it's not like she's any slouch of an iron woman.
Yeah, I'm interested to know what Danielle and what Geordie Mercer as well in particular are going to do in terms of preparing for the event. They're obviously very talented iron woman. Whether they continue to do both downwind paddling and iron woman racing... Look, if I was Danny, I completely wouldn't blame her just going all in on downwind paddling because, you know, you could argue that there's far more potential for her to make a living off that than there is off the Iron Woman series, just considering her dominance at the moment. So, Mac, plenty to look forward to and plenty to get us motivated to train through winter.
Can't wait.
Number two.
And while we certainly are excited to see the racing season take shape in some form, there are some things that are bigger than competition. Oskar Chalupsi, the greatest surf ski paddler of all time and certainly the most recognizable around the world, is currently going through his cancer treatment after discovering multiple myeloma at the doctor actually last year. Now, Oskar has given us a few updates on his Facebook page. He's had a few scares along the way as well. One such scare with a high temperature sent him to hospital a few weeks ago. But he's taking this head on as you'd expect, and he's certainly as positive as ever. Mac, now, it's hard to actually articulate just how much Oscar's done for the sport and just how crucial he is to the international surf ski community, but
it really is.
Mate, I want to celebrate his contribution. Let's talk Oscar. Let's talk Oscar stories. What have you got?
Oh wow, aren't there? I don't even know where to start. There are quite a number of them, but I think personally, like one that I was there witness to, was 2014, we raced the Nello Summer Challenge, and it was a pumping downwind, extreme, like great level of athlete there as well. And Corey snagged the win ahead of Darwood in probably record time, and it was pretty much downwind the entire time. Start behind a rock wall and pretty well 100 meters out, you're straight into it. And 19 kilometer downwind course. And I remember sitting around after the race, you know, have a few beers, everyone's eating, chatting about it. No one's ever sad after a good downwind. But I always know that Oscar thinks he could have done better, and that was no different. He seemed to think that if the start and the finish didn't exist, he would have won the race.
But you know what? It's probably hard to bet against him as well. And I believe that's where the now iconic time on a tradition of comparing splits came from.
Oh, I think that's exactly what it was. I think he got Corey in a couple actually that day, probably more than he ever has since.
For anyone who hasn't seen it, Oscar will, after every major race, go up to the winners and demand to see their 1,000 meter splits throughout the course. And you know what? I'm actually thinking about, maybe it was the Doctor 2018, and Oscar did get, he got Boothie in one kilometer split. I'm not sure if he got Corey, but the celebration from the great man was if he'd won the race. He's given us plenty of laughs over the years, but you know what? I think there's a side of him too that doesn't often get recognised, or at least isn't shown in public. You know, he's an incredibly kind man. He's an incredibly kind man, and you know, I kind of,
you would have bear witness
was the beneficiary of that. Yeah, that's exactly right. I was when I was a dirty backpacker last year, kind of
the surf ski socialite,
making my way around the world looking for a decent meal. Oscar actually really helped me out in Germany. You know, I needed to get from Rostock, where we were racing, the home of Gordon Harbrecht, to Berlin, and I just thought it was a simple bus trip. Turns out it was a much bigger journey than that, and Oscar not only drove me to Berlin, but he said, where am I dropping you? Where are you staying? And I said, oh, mate, I don't know. Like, you know, I've got no idea. And he said, oh, well, look up hotels. And I said, oh, hotels? I'm not staying in a hotel. You know, find me the nearest 24-bed dorm. And he said, no, it's all right. You can come stay with me tonight. And it just kind of, you know, I said, oh, yeah, sure. And it was the most incredible experience. It was actually like an old hotel, Soviet-era hotel that the Berlin's Nello dealer had bought and was turning into a training camp. And, you know, I stayed in this own hotel room, and we actually had a paddle on the lake that it's in front of, and had dinners. And, you know, as much as I tried, you know, Oscar and Claire, they're so kind. They wouldn't let me pay a cent. They took me in as one of their own. And, you know, we actually had such a good experience there. You know, I certainly would say that Oscar, the friendship that we've formed since then is something I truly cherish. And I'm incredibly grateful. You know, things like the voice clips that he's done for us, this podcast, he doesn't hesitate to do stuff like that.
No.
We're incredibly appreciative for it.
I also think as well, like, just him going and putting everything so visually on Facebook and all different media outlets is just like a testament to who he is. He's like not scared to shy away from anything, or like the challenge, and like winning is the only option in this fight to him.
Look, the way he explained it was that the more he talks about it, the more recognition there is, and hopefully it motivates someone to go and get checked themselves. So Oscar, mate, we are all thinking of you. We're sending you all of our love, and we know you're going to get through it.
Number one.
Well, Mac, it is hard to look at anything in life at the moment and not think about the impact that COVID-19 has had on it. What a little pain. Hey, what a virus that has just popped up and completely destabilized our global society. And it's certainly having that effect on the surf ski world as well. Now, in a racing sense, we're seeing more and more races be cancelled. We've gone past the first event that would have ran otherwise. Molokai was the first big casualty. But since then, we've seen Mauritius called off. Now, the Gorge at this stage is still going ahead. But as we know, it's unlikely that any international athletes will be able to go and contest what is one of the most loved events in the world. And then the world titles in September. Now, we'll speak about this a little bit later on, but that is something that is certainly up in the air. And in my eyes, there's no way that it will be able to run. But beyond the racing, Macca, it's gone a lot more into the personal lives. Now, South Africans, as it stands, they still can't get on the water and paddle. They've been given permission, or they've been given word from the government that that will change for elite paddlers in the coming weeks. But they still haven't been on the water now, and it's been months.
Hasn't it?
It is an incredible situation.
Yeah, it's it's unprecedented. I mean, we can't really measure it up to anything else. It's obviously, it's hard. It has put a dampener and a downer on surf ski paddling as a whole, for us athletes. But it's, in a way, it is unfair to speak about it like that. There is bigger pictures, like we just mentioned with the Big O and what goes on in the world. But sometimes, you know, for a lot of us, this is our livelihood. This is our income. This is our job. And it's sort of been snatched away from you.
That's exactly right. It's important to keep it in perspective. But Macca, for you personally, now you left your job this year to go on a global surf ski racing tour.
Yeah, you're right. I was going to take over your reign as a surf ski socialite, but obviously that's sort of, yeah, that's definitely taken a back burner. I definitely did. I stopped my job. I was going to work less, take a back step with uni, do less there. And I really wanted to see what I could do on the surf ski tour and see how that would unfold. And unfortunately, that's not meant to be. Well, it's not meant to be up until whenever everything kicks back off. And, you know, having these races that are falling by the wayside, I think Molokai, you know, you saw that we're going to have to wait for another showdown between Corey and Hank at the old Molokai. But I think it's the level of uncertainty among the paddlers as well. Just not knowing, not being able to train for some people, like our good friends in South Africa. You know, there's so much that's left untouched, and we really don't know where to go.
Yeah, yeah. And that's the thing too, is that it goes far beyond that racing element. You know, for all of us, but for everyone who paddles, paddling is an escape. It's an outlet in life that not just keeps them healthy, but keeps them sane a lot of the time too. And, you know, we've had those conversations with our friend in South Africa, just, you know, checking up on them all and seeing how they're actually coping mentally being off the water. Because, you know, even in the off-season time, paddlers will only generally spend a week or two off the water. You know, if that, they're getting close to 3 months now of not being able to paddle. And I think that the emotional impact it's had on a lot of people is something that's been quite difficult, and something that we here in Australia, Mac, really haven't experienced in any way. We were never stopped from getting on the water.
No.
While it's cancelled a few of our events, you know, our Australian series, as we mentioned earlier, is likely to go ahead. We're the lucky ones. We've been relatively untouched by this. But for paddlers all across the world, it is a bizarre time.
Isn't it? I mean, I don't think we've even seen the full effect of it, to be honest. We've only seen Molokai sort of fall by the wayside. We know what's coming. Like you said, Worlds, I just don't see the viable option of it running. You know, we know what's around the corner. And it's sort of saddening. It's a saddening feeling, because that's, you know, this will be the first winter I've spent, the majority of winter I've spent in Australia for a long time, since 2015. It's going to be cold. Not so cold, I guess.
Yeah, that's not a here problem.
On the Gold Coast. Yeah, so I can imagine you poor in Sydney, man, on the beautiful weather of the Gold Coast. But yeah, it's just a different feeling. I love the travel, you know, and also the friendships that you've made. You know when you front up to these races all around the world and you see these people, you know there's going to be a next time. So as hard as it is to say goodbye to these people, you know that at the next race we'll all front up again and we'll tell all the stories that have happened in between. And I mean, won't it be a nice bringing back together of everyone? Nice reunion when it all opens back up. But in the meantime, yeah, it's a little bit sad.
Solidarity to all paddlers around the world. Keep at it, keep up the brave fight, and hopefully you'll be all back on the water soon. Mac, that's the power plays. We got through it, our top five. I don't think we really said anything too controversial, to be honest. We'll have to save that for future episodes.
Yeah,
but
100%.
We do have a little bit more to say in just a moment. So, Mac, we've both had our break during lockdown, but now we're both getting back on the water. How's training gone?
Yeah, you're right, Sam. I mean, it's pretty tough at the moment, lacking a little bit in motivation, but I am loving paddling probably more than I ever have. How about you? How's everything going for yourself?
Oh, fitness is taking a hit, that's for sure. Ouch. Yeah, the old engine isn't quite moving like it should, but thankfully the boat does plenty of the work for me to make up for that. I've been paddling Stella surf skis for 6 years now, and in that time I've raced on plenty of their models, even sea kayaks, but I'm loving the SEA. The Stella Elite Assassin is the latest boat in their diverse range of surf skis and kayaks. Whether you're looking for something to give you the competitive edge or simply want something to take out on the water and enjoy the great outdoors with ease, Stella Kayaks has the one for you. Head to stellakayaks.com.au and view the full range today. Stella Kayaks, the next generation of performance. All right, Mac, it's time to break up our voices, I think. Let's get a guest on. And add a bit of professionalism to the Paddler's First Pod episode as well. We're going to try and give our very good friend, Sean Rice, a ring, the first ever ICF World Champion in 2013, and the current world champion as well. He's someone whose racing career is being affected more than most through COVID-19, as we've discussed at this time. Mac, odds on of Sean answering, it is my maths early in the morning over in London.
Yeah, we'll see how we go, Sam. I mean, we'd like to think of him as our good friend, but I guess we'll soon see how important our phone call is.
Yeah, it's almost as if we've pre-arranged this as well. So if he doesn't actually answer, we're in a bit of trouble.
Agreed on that front.
Hello?
Sean. Hi, mate. It's Sam Jordan and Mackenzie Heinart here from the Paddler's Pod.
Yo, boys. What's up?
Not much. How are ya?
Yeah, I'm well, thanks. I'm well.
We've timed this so well that you actually answered that phone. I wasn't sure how that one was going to go.
I not answered your calls?
Well, I can think of a few recent Saturday night phone calls between the three of us when we've had a few beers here in Australian time and you've been having breakfast in London.
I can attest.
Mate, how's things?
Yeah, not too bad, thanks. Not too bad. It's a glorious summer's week here, so... I have little to complain about.
Now, talk us through it. Macro and I have just been spending a fair bit of time talking about COVID-19 and its impact on paddling is something we can't really escape at the moment. For you in London, and I guess actually just on that, a lot of people may not know that you live in London. How has this affected your surf ski paddling?
I live in London. I've lived here for about 2.5-3 years already. It's had a huge impact. You know, on sports, it's definitely an impact, but on life as a whole. So there was a period of time where we went into quite a strict lockdown, self-isolation period where we weren't really allowed to exercise. So actually, we were always allowed to exercise once a day, but they sort of really clamped down to just running and walking and stuff and no water sports. So they've since relaxed that. I'm back on the water. And as of today, really, we actually... allowed to train with groups up to six, but it's been hugely disruptive, but still quite a small inconvenience compared to what else is going on.
It must be a tough one for you personally as well, because, you know, Macro and I have spoken a fair bit about what it means for racing in Australia, what it means for racing in South Africa too, but for you in the UK, I guess you rely probably, you know, more than anyone else on traveling in order to get your racing in. Have you been worried by this? How have you kind of absorbed all the news?
Yeah, this has been a big one. So my life has sort of run in cycles for the last 10 to 11, 12, maybe 12 years already. You know, just cycles of really around sports. So around seasons, summer seasons, chasing races, being fit at certain part of the years, not being fit. And everything's been quite structured. As chaotic as it is, it's quite structured. So come on 2020, getting... things going and typically I'm quite unfit in the beginning of the year because I take December and that off, and so just starting to get going, and then all of this happened and all of a sudden the rug was pulled and I found myself as a professional paddler without sort of a timeline and goals for the first time in a long time. And I must be honest, it was tough, and it is still tough, but I've come to realize a few other things. But yeah, it's, you know, I had a good few conversations with friends who are in similar positions and other people I sort of rely on. And it kind of became evident that I've been at this for so long and it's really tough because of that. But at the same time, it's that rest that maybe I needed. And I've since sort of having these conversations and realizing that it's actually been quite nice. I don't want to use the word nice because it's still horrible, but it hasn't been the end of the world for my sport.
Do you, you mentioned there some of those realizations that you had. What kind of realizations were those?
Well, I've always raced. I've always sort of like keep. People always ask like, how do you keep motivated? And everyone's got a different reason. But for me, I've literally, my motivation has been that I've always said to myself, and maybe this is a bit dramatic, but I've always approached seasons and specific races saying, this is going to be the last, this could be the last time. Like, and that sounds awfully dramatic, but I've always just tried to keep that sense of appreciation. And I have at times lost that sense where it's just, seems like the next race is always going to be there, but I've always thought that, and then coming into the end of last year, I had a little think about it, because you know, my life, everyone's lives are constantly changing. I've got a evolving life here, and I thought, you know, this might be the last, the one of the last years, or I don't know. And then all of a sudden it was, and then I'm going, now I'm in a period where I'm going like, shit, actually I want so much more out of my paddling. I actually, you know, I need it. I need it so bad. And yeah, I don't know. I'm in a much better place now than what I was a few weeks ago. And it's been a long, I think we're close to 12 weeks now of all of this.
The natural feelings though that you've had. And I guess that's one thing for a lot of athletes to come to terms with, is that, you know, there's almost that feeling of guilt that you referenced, in that you're having those thoughts when there are kind of much bigger things going on in the world. But for an athlete, you know, this has been your life for so long, not just through racing, but your coaching as well, that through paddle life, that has taken you around the world.
Yeah, and I didn't realize, so my relationship with sports is a complicated one. in that it is a, first and foremost, it's a passion. I believe it's a passion for most to begin. Mm. But then it becomes your career, and it very much is an important part of my life financially, and that's, and I gauge a lot of my success on my sport. It's only natural. So what I've had to sort of, you know, realize is when basically, here's the story. So lockdown happened. I wasn't allowed to paddle for 2 or 3 weeks. I wasn't advised to paddle, and I was still exercising, but I was getting a bit grumpy. And actually I noticed that in myself, the one day when I eventually did go back, and I just thought, you know, I'm just going to go for a paddle. I've got nothing to paddle for, but I'm going to go for a paddle. I went for a float, you know, not very far or whatever. I came back and I was like buzzing. I came back and I was doing sort of to my wife, Emily, and I was like, man, that was just awesome. I just did nothing, but I just felt like I had an escape again. And what I've basically realized is, you know, psychologically, mental health wise, I need sports for health and mentally and physically. And now I've been able to sort of channel my exercise. I'm not really training, but it is exercising into being that fix. And it's such a healthy thing to do. Mm. I'm trying not to be too airy-fairy here, but I reckon this break is going to prolong my career tremendously, because yeah. I think I might have burnt out quite a bit sooner if I hadn't had this. Because it was really, it's become a job. I was paddling for work, and I was doing well. Like I take my work and my sport very seriously, but it was not falling out of love, but I've learned to really love it again.
I think for me, Sean, I definitely felt that coming out of last season and going into this one, having a few like up and downs, and then planning such a huge year. Well, it was for me, and I'm sure you're probably the same a little bit. And I was quite excited about the season and what it had in store. And then you have that, like you said, the rug just be pulled from underneath you. And like, you know, you have to be selfish as an athlete, but you know, there is bigger things happening in the world. And I was in the same boat. It took me ages to get motivated to paddle. And then all of a sudden you don't have anything there that you're chasing, because you don't know what is next in store. But geez, it felt good, didn't it? To just have a paddle. And yeah. Like, I haven't really been that enthusiastic about paddling since, you know, you jump on and learn, really.
Yeah, and I've also really was quite worried about the sport as a whole when I was worried about the loss of momentum that it has, you know, not being able to do races this year. And I was worried about the industry as a whole, because I've got partners and sponsors, and I'm involved in it myself with Paddle Life, and just really worrying about the whole sport. And what I've come to realize through my own experiences and watching others is that I'm actually seeing, in the UK at least, and these are mainly recreational paddlers, but so many people on the water and so many people striving to do sports. And I think it's for the reason that we've, as a nation, as like a population, have realized the importance of sports for health and wellness, other than just looking ripped and whatever. and kayaking or paddling or surf ski or whatever you want to call it is a very natural fix and quite an appealing one. And I was worried about the races not happening. And, you know, that's from my own selfish perspective. And I was worried that it might stunt the growth of the sport. But I reckon that this might actually be one of the best things for the greater, the broadest growth of the sports, like actual people just on the water. This might be just what we needed. An individual sport that gets you into environments and you know, pretty places and fun environments and that sense of adventure, you know?
Yeah, I completely agree. And that's actually something that some of the conversations I've been having with some of the surf ski distributors here in Australia is that they've never been busier in terms of people wanting to get boats and get on the water. So yeah, no, I think that's a great point. But Sean, another one that I find interesting and one that I'm keen to get your thoughts on. Now, you mentioned the plans that you had for the year 2020. I can imagine that key to those would be defending your world title that you reclaimed last year. So you won in 2013. Corey Hill wins in 2015 and 17 before you snatch it back. Now, I know how much that win meant to you and how motivated you undoubtedly would be to retain it. Where do you stand at the moment? Now, we've seen on the paddler.news in the past week a number of articles, the latest from the Australian CEO of paddling down here, who says that he thinks it's pretty unlikely that the World Championships can go ahead in any form. How do you feel as the reigning champ?
Yeah, I actually just read that article this morning. Very good. So
thanks for that plug, by the way.
There's two arguments, I guess. There's one that we should do it for the reason that we don't want to lose momentum. And you know, the Portuguese Canoe Federation and whoever's involved with organizing it have put in a huge amount of effort, and ICF are trying to build our sport, blah, blah, blah. But at the end of the day, paddlers' health and safety needs to be first and foremost. And then second to that is fair sport. And at this stage, if I look at it quite clearly in my mind, I've been able to paddle for a couple of months. You know, my brother, on the other hand, he's literally getting hopefully into the boat for the first time today since March or whenever. The whole run-up to the season is unfair. Then the actual travel to the World Champs, it's very, very, very unlikely that all the nations will be there. And for that reason, I don't know why the World Champs is pushing to go. I think it's disrespectful to what's going on. To a certain degree, it's disrespectful and unrealistic to what's really going on in the world. And I appreciate there's you know, we should try and move on as much as possible. But I don't believe it's going to be safe for everyone. I don't believe it's going to be fair for everyone. And for that reason, I don't think it's necessary. And I'm talking very specifically about a world championships, not about events. I think races, they should get going as soon as they are safe to do so, wherever they are. But we're talking world championships, and if I line up and Corey's not there, or my brother's not there, or Macca, you're not, whatever, whoever is not there, and I win, cool, I won. But I know, and everyone else will know, that it doesn't mean anything. And maybe I'm being too passionate about it, but I just think it's unnecessary stress, unnecessary pressure on every single person, from manufacturers to athletes to federations to, you know, there's big decisions here, and we need to consolidate our efforts. And I don't know, I don't want it to rip apart a already fragile relationship as World Surf Ski has.
Yeah, they're great points, especially on the fairness of the event. You know, you can't ignore the fact that Australia has never been stopped from getting on the water. You know, you did have some time off, but then you've been able to get back on for a while, and South Africa still hasn't. The World Championships aren't that far away. If we were racing as normal, which, you know, the three of us would have, or, you know, who knows, maybe even still get there, you know, we're all set to race. We would have started our blocks, you know, for me at least anyway, a few weeks ago.
Yeah, I read that part of 8 weeks preparation, whatever. Come on.
Yeah,
it's not quite fair, is it?
Forget about the athletes. Like, we're not all, not everyone's running on the gold card to book flights 8 weeks to go.
Well, that's the other
accommodation
thing, isn't it?
And like, just call it. Just make a call, and you know, it's so much easier. You know, I work in live events outside of paddling, and we've had to cancel. We'll first postpone and then cancel events, and we've done them well in advance, and we've only had positive feedback. I know of other events that haven't done that, and it just causes stress and anxiety. And I really hope to race this year, and I believe that there will be some races, let it be Australia or wherever. But world championships, and now that they're every year, like, what's 1 year? I don't know.
Yes, and I think that's the other thing, and coming back to your earlier point as well, in that there are, the racing calendar's chock full now of prime international events, and some of them carry a lot of money. You know, the Doctor and 20 Beaches both have $10,000 Australian on them for the win. We've seen the success of Ireland in previous years. The thing that separates the world championships from those events is the prestige. You're not going there to win money, you're going there to become a world champion. And if an Australia, or if a South Africa, or even, you know, if Sean, if you're unable to get there from the UK, or, you know, Gordon from Germany, Austin from the US, as soon as someone's missing from that field, it loses the prestige. And essentially,
well,
it takes away the attraction.
At this stage, I'm not going. I'm not going. Until something changes, and it doesn't mean I won't go overseas or whatever, I don't know, but I don't believe that they'll be able to run a mass participation event safely and fairly.
With that in mind, Sean, you know, do you look towards November and hold out hope, given Australia's kind of handling of coronavirus at the moment, that you may be able to make a trip down under for the Doctor in November? Do you have those thoughts in your mind?
Yeah, I really do hope that comes together. And, you know, Australia has done other countries too, has done a really fantastic job, I think, of being able to even have this as an option. You know, you're considered a safe bet. And maybe, I've been thinking quite a bit about this, but maybe Australia, like, even without the internationals, it's a good example of how, just within your own domestic market, you know, you can maintain your racing series and really sort of grow them even more domestically. You know, me as an international paddler, getting there would be a huge bonus, I hope, for myself and for the event. But otherwise, just carrying on as you are, you know, you're probably going to be able to run very safe and, you know, fair competitions there. And maybe it's a good example of what we should all just be striving to do is, you know, in my case, I'm going to really be attending all the events in the UK and, you know, when they start running again. And just give it a little break before we start, you know, flying around the world and creating unnecessary danger or pressure. But yeah, there's been a lot of talk about events starting here again, not on huge scale, but I'll be there because now I'm really hungry to race.
That's great to hear.
Yeah, I'm exactly the same. I mean, I can't wait to get back in the boat and have a race. But I guess a question that is sort of playing on my mind, Sean, is more so the viability of me being able to travel and race. Like, there's 2 weeks here to be quarantined, and I dare say 2 weeks wherever I travel to race. Is that, to me, it's not really a viable option. I mean, yes, we've had a massive influx of income and money into the sport, but I mean, we're certainly not making millions, let's not kid ourselves. Is 5 weeks, you know, say 5 weeks a viable option for you to be away from home, away from your wife, away from work?
No, it's not. And, you know, I've been quite hard on the world championships. I still believe that if there was a World Cup, or it became, you know, just the race that is local to that area, is the Nello Summer Challenge. It's an amazing event, just fantastic. And it really breaks my heart that they can't host the events that they plan, because I was at that first one and it was just brilliant. I think we all were, the three of us. It was just brilliant, like absolutely brilliant. Like, I would argue one of the best
events. Yeah, they know how to host a race.
It is one of the best events in the world. So, I don't know. Like, quarantining-wise, maybe that's the way to simplify the whole conversation. Can I do 5 weeks away? The answer, quite simply, is no at this stage.
Yeah, well, Sean, there's I think that's the one thing that we've learned so far in this entire pandemic is that we can't exactly predict what's coming next. So look, let's have our fingers crossed that we'll not only be racing soon, but we'll all be racing together. That's certainly the best outcome. Now, Sean, we can't let you go without throwing you into the deep end. 10 doubles. It's the 10 questions.
It's a new format.
It is a new format. And look, we're still finding our feet with it. But this is the hard stuff. You know, I with respect to all your answers on the World Championships, this is the questions we really want to know. Now, Sean, we're going to ask you 10 questions. We want to know the first thing that comes to your mind.
Okay.
It's a bit like doing 10 doubles in a race. You sort of want it to be, you know, muscle memory. Just so whatever comes to your head first is what we want to hear.
That is where Sean's competitive instinct takes over. He's easily the second fastest off 10 doubles in this conversation. Maybe the third, depending on how I'm feeling. Nothing on Macca, who loves to lead out a race. The photo's still framed on his wall, Sean, of leading off the line in France. All right, so Sean...
nothing from him.
Nothing from him. Look, because to be honest, you know, he was actually just saving his energy to make Donald win the race by about a minute's time. All right, Sean, let's just throw these answers at us. Number one, 10 doubles. What paddle length and angle do you use?
Between 214 and 216 at 60 degrees right feather.
Wow. See,
that's a bit longer than me.
Yeah, we did have every intention just to fly through these 10 questions, but I feel like I'm just going to stop and pick your brains after. Yeah. Sean, number two, what's the fastest kilometre you've ever recorded?
Oh, it's low 250.
Fast. Three, what's the furthest...
I did it with Macca there.
I wasn't anywhere near that pace though.
Waiting. I got terribly cold that day waiting for Macca. It was in Portugal, actually.
It sure was, yeah. Little did I know that I was going to be crook as a dog, but anyway, that's okay.
Quickly through them, sorry.
Number three, what's the furthest you've paddled in one session?
At least 55 kilometers, so maybe Cape Horn Challenge.
Yeah. Number four, what's your go-to pre-race dinner?
Steak and salad with wine.
I'm sorry, that answer is actually incorrect. I know for a fact what you eat for dinner before a race, and you are yet to actually eat that.
Wait.
Your go-to pre-race dinner. Did you hear that part of it?
Go-to pre-race dinner.
Like, what will you have before a race? Steak and a glass of wine. You've just absolutely rattled me because...
Maybe that's how long ago I raced. I don't even know.
Maybe it meant nothing to you, but I certainly hold fond memories of being your racing caddy in 2019. People may not know that I'm actually unofficially the third Rice brother. Sean, what do we stay together in... I flew to London on your request to do a training camp before Worlds. We stayed together in France. We stayed together in Ireland, where I actually had a ready-made dinner on the table for you upon arrival.
Yes.
That's the commitment that I was putting into your racing last year. It was. Sean, number five, what's your favorite race in the world?
The one I've really enjoyed is the Maramu in Tahiti.
That's a bit of a love hate.
Yeah, that's a total love hate. But that's what makes love so great. It's not all romance. That is definitely not all romance, that event. But
I've done the Maramu twice. I've finished it twice and said that I was never going back. And I've cried the last 10 kilometers both times. But I would absolutely go back in an instant.
It's a real harsh one. It's an emotional roller coaster. But I guess like any good relationship, that's what you need sometimes.
All right, that's your favorite race, Sean. A race you'd be happy to never go back to.
Oh, shit. There's been some races and... I'm not going to go into names and stuff.
Go on.
No, it's just races in Italy. Not all of them, but there was one in particular. Okay. Yeah. Anyway, moving on.
Sean Seven, who's the greatest paddler of all time?
Oh, Greatest paddler.
First name. We've stumped the unstumpable.
Look, I did have some kind of urgency on the 10 doubles. I know this is sometimes how you do start a race, Sean, but yeah, we've got to get that rating up.
Dropping back a little bit.
Greatest paddler of all time.
Find the wash, Sean. Find the wash.
I can't answer that. I don't know. I'm sorry.
Wow.
I don't know.
It stopped him.
It has. That's a...
Yeah.
Yeah, it is a big question. It is a big question. I also appreciate the fact that you're really tiptoeing through these answers too, not to offend anyone. So I can respect that.
Yeah, I'm definitely not going to say anyone I'm currently racing. and it's definitely not you, Macca. No, I'm joking. You actually were the first.
I'll probably be the answer to the next question. So
okay, go. Sorry.
Well, Sean, who is the worst trainer you've come across?
Worst trainer I've ever come across, Corey Hill.
Bravo. I love how you haven't thrown anyone in the deep end until that point.
No, he's not. He's actually too good at training. I'm supposed to, but when I went over for the 2017 Worlds, I stayed in Australia for a couple of months and trained with Macca and Corey and them. And I'd heard before that he trains like every second day and, you know, does like 10Ks and then gets off and whatever. But it's absolutely true. I mean, you don't go there to train with him. He's the worst at training because he doesn't train.
I was so nervous that you were going to say me.
No, you're the worst at racing. And it's not because you can't race. It's because you can't actually get to the end of the race.
It is hard to argue with that. But 2020 was going to be my year. Look, there's always 2021. Yeah. Sean, what do you rate as your greatest paddling achievement?
My first World Championships.
Your first over your second?
My first and then closely followed by my second. And I've thought about this, but the first one was just such a pivot and a sort of realization for the rest of my career. And the second one was just massive because it was almost like a return. Like I'd proven to myself that I still got it sort of thing. Cause it always been some ups and downs and then those two are the big ones.
All right, Sean, we're at the end of 10 doubles. Finish this sentence. I'm a paddler because...
I have to.
I love it. Sean Rice, thank you so much for joining the Paddlers Pod.
All right, thanks, guys.
Gee, I enjoyed that chat, Macca. How good was it to catch up with Sean and not only hear about how well he's doing, you know, over there in London now after a bit of a spell, but also to hear him kind of give his thoughts on the World Championships as well. It's certainly one issue that he's going to play out over the next month or so. But Macca, that brings us to the end of our first episode.
Sadly, till the end, I know.
Yeah, but there is one more thing that we're going to do at the end of each episode moving forward is that I don't think there's been enough controversial opinions. I don't think there's been enough getting off the fence. So, Macca, we're going to give our big call. Now, I want to hear from you some kind of outlandish claim, maybe a little bit controversial, about anything that you want to do with surfski paddling. Now, I'll kick things off. My big call is that the World Championships will be cancelled, but the Nello Summer Challenge will run in some form instead.
That's huge, Sam.
Wow.
That's big.
Look, I think it's a reasonably safe bet at this point in time, but I'm trying to make it as controversial as possible.
Yeah, I tend to agree.
All right, so we're giving that one a big...
Now, that's a big call.
Mac, what do you got?
I'm going to go a little later in the year. All this talk about... the doctor and the new race week format.
Okay.
I'm going to go two parts. I think firstly, there won't be any internationals at the race week this year.
Oh, okay.
As much as I'd love to see them there. And then secondly, I still think though that there would be or there will be no Ironman in the top five of the race week.
That is certainly...
Yep. That is a very big call.
Wow. So just to clarify, Mac, you're saying that even if it's Australians only at the doctor, you're still saying there'll be no Ironman in top five.
Ali Day is going to prove me wrong. Why do I say that?
He's absolutely going to prove me wrong.
Ali, don't listen to the podcast. You don't need more ammunition.
Oof.
I've cooked it. I've definitely cooked it.
Hey, absolute respect though, Mac. We wanted a big call. You certainly give us one to kick things off. So
let's wrap it up.
Look, we'll leave that to our listeners. if there is any, to hold us to that in future. I'm sure Mac's going to love hearing that if he's on the podium at the doctor. But Mac, thank you very much, mate. We'll do it again soon.
Sounds good. Take care, everyone. Enjoy.